Lafayette, Lake Charles. Listener-supported public radio for Acadiana. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. Weather for the KRVS listening area. Showers and thunderstorms likely this afternoon and this evening. Some of the storms could produce heavy rainfall. Mostly cloudy with a high of around 86 degrees. Southwest winds at 5 miles per hour. A 60% chance of rain this afternoon and this evening. A continuing 50% chance of rain on Friday. Currently, we are still dripping from a shower that just passed through a few minutes ago. It's 77 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up later this hour, it'll be Daryl Borks from the Poets Bookshelf segment. Judith Merriweather will join us a little bit later. And at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. Music begins with a performance by the Lydian String Quartet. Here they perform John Harbison's String Quartet No. 2.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Harbison String Quartet No. 2, performed by the Lillian String Quartet. It's 26 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock.
It is Thursday afternoon when KRVS presents From the Poet's Bookshelf with Louisiana poet Darryl Bourque, reading works by writers from or inspired by Louisiana.
Today's two poems are by Jay Udall, a poet who teaches at Nicholls State University in Thibodaux. The first poem published in the journal Bayou is called Leave Taking. Father, leave your books and papers, your glasses on the desk, leave your wallet on the dresser, the pictures on the walls, leave the walls, leave your clothes in the closet still, bearing your scent, the ghost of your shape, leave in your favorite green corduroys with the fraying waist and cuffs and the gaudy bathrobe you loved for some reason we'll never quite know. Leave your view of the mountains framing the passing sky, the optical delusion of your separateness, your dreaming eye, the unframed threshold where we breathe. And the second poem by Jay Udall, The Whale Room, published in The Pedestal. Jay Udall, who teaches at Nicholls State University. The Well Room. Lift the old board and a coolness shaped like the inside would rise with the held-in smell of rust, webs, wet cinder block, and earth, many legged lives thriving in the blind black, forgotten hollow that thumped like a drum under our bare and sneakered or snow-booted feet in the very center of our yard, beneath kick the can and hide and seek, below our noise, drama, schemes, another room. It housed a pump that pulled water from deep ground to our faucets. In my head, it drank from the river down the cliff where we caught catfish, bass, and eel, and threw the eels back, but dark-skinned men sliced them into pieces to bait hooks, blood redder than our own blotching the sun-warmed concrete beside the spillway that swallowed boys who tried to run it in tubes. Trees, stars reached from places no one could see. A lame dog and a sick friend disappeared. Once, to be as brave as my brother, I crouched in that squat hole as he pulled the board over, the bright summer day and all that was in it drifting too easily away without me. When the pump failed, our father would lower himself in, stooping to the work, cursing, rising to search his tool chest for a different wrench, the one that would bring the water back, the top of him sticking out of the mouth, going down again.
Join KRVS each Thursday afternoon for From the Poet's Bookshelf with Louisiana poet Darryl Bourque. And with me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Mary Bate. She is a curator at the Acadiana Center for the Arts and the duo GAS, Generic Art Solutions, Tony Campbell and Matt Viss, who are with us in the studios. They will be opening an exhibit in the side gallery at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Saturday for Second Saturday Art Walk. And we'll be talking with you in a little while, Mary, about what other exhibits are on display at the ACA. But the two of you are from New Orleans at the moment. You've been there about 10 years, I guess. How long have you been Generic Art Solutions?
Well, we came up with that name when we, maybe was that in New York? I think we met in New York. And so we came up with a name instead of going by our surnames, which was kind of common in London at the time with art duos, you know. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And it was because, like, the generic in England is kind of like has a different use. People we look at generic products as kind of being streamlined and stylish. Whilst here, you kind of look at kind of baked bean cans or something, you know. So, there's a very different look at that.
It usually says generic baked bean can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, has it always been that way? Do you remember when that term first started being used in England?
I think it was like kind of products from America, what you considered to be very generic, coming to England, like you know those clamp lamps with the aluminum. They're kind of stylish in England, but they're kind of nothing here, right?
They're sort of, GI issue or something. Mm. Yeah. So generic is classy in England. and I guess the curious part about the name really is not so much generic to me as solutions. How did you think of art as a solution? I don't know how many of our listeners would come up with that word attached to art.
Well, I remember... first conversations, we were trying to think of like a team name or something, some sort of brand or team name, Mr. Goodwrench. Remember that? That we would be a team that can just do whatever we feel like. Basically, a lot of our work is kind of problem solving in a way, taking a contemporary situation and then lampooning it maybe sometimes, or just having a deeper insight to it.
We often respond to art history heavily, mm-hmm. and so there's this kind of mix of basically we filter like the world now through the filter of art history. So it's kind of, maybe it's our working method is a solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you're describing that, I'm sure there's some humorous instances of that that pop into people's minds. You know, there are those situations where they'll put a contemporary couple in the American, you know, the one with the pitchfork.
American Gothic. We actually did that.
So you've been down that route mm-hmm. also. Well, what was it about the two of you and your work that drew you to each other? How did you find out about your work?
Well, we both have got a performance art background, and often with performance art, you know, you working with someone else makes the dynamic much more interesting. And in New York, our first project that we came up with was Rudolph Giuliani was the mayor at the time, and he was having this very kind of no broken window kind of policy, and no jaywalking at all.
Yeah, which cabaret laws, like old obscure no dancing laws, were coming back into effect.
And so it was like Rudy Giuliani had his own army, like the police force, right? This was before 9/11, mm-hmm. before he became a saint. But like before that, he wasn't so saintly. But so we thought it would be interesting for the art world to have its own police force. So we invented the International Art Police, Art Cops. And so we had talked about this kind of like pedestrian. You know, you over here when you go to a gallery, you over here people talk. When they step outside the door, then they start to talk about what was mm-hmm. in the gallery, because mm-hmm. the walls have ears, and mm-hmm. so and we kind of like those pedestrian criticisms. You know, you'll see this big minimalist show, and people will come out and say, "That was boring, wasn't it?" You know, like or something like that. And that was our first project. So it actually all of our work basically has some kind of performative aspect to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So was that a part of both of your art education? I know Tony, you're from London, and you're from a number of places in the United States. Matt, how did you get involved in performance art? I think, again, some people, it's a little opaque to people what that is and how it fits into the art world.
I know. I actually feel like I started performance in a way because being a comedian. And before being a comedian, I actually told jokes to, my father would invite our priest over for Sunday after dinner, and then my dad would say, okay, so tell some jokes to the priest. So I, someone would tell him, tell him some sort of religious jokes, and that didn't last very long. but then I did drama, actually, like just straight mm-hmm. drama classes at Michigan State, and then kind of dropped it for a while.
So the performance was very natural to you early on, and theatrical performances as well.
I never thought I would be like a craftsman mm-hmm. in that way. So it was just kind of a way to. If you're nervous at a party, you just start telling jokes or juggling or something. So mm-hmm. I always did some of that.
But when you studied art, did you study more classical art, visual arts, painting?
I was interested in the process art, a lot of process art, and certainly a lot of the happenings of the 60s and 70s were interesting because they were so socially aware, I think, at the time. And it was very genuine and raw. Like I remember seeing a lot of like black and white pictures of a performance happening, so understanding also the layers of artwork, mm-hmm. like the photograph is just a document of the artwork itself, so you're not getting the artwork unless you're seeing the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the photograph becomes a document of that, like kind of proof.
So early on, interested in the history of art and process. I mean, because obviously the 60s was already art history by the time.
It was already art history,
And how about you, Tony? How did you get involved in performance art? And
Mainly through video, actually. So I would, after art school, I kind of got a job of video editing, and that was before digital inline stuff. So because I had these facilities, I was like, I need to make some video. And obviously the most available person around was myself to be in these videos. So that's how it kind of started. Then later on, I kind of started to do some circusy things, like beds of nail, like I did a bed of nails thing, and kind of, and then some kind of like weird pain endurance performances.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of laughing off.
You were
off
thinking
about
that.
I was like, oh, man, he's gonna tell us.
Well, no, the other interesting part about your relationship is that you use yourselves as subjects a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously in performance art you are a subject, but it's not just in your performance art that you use yourself as subjects. It's in
the photographs.
The photographs. Yeah. And how did you start doing that?
We kind of see it as we're standing in for all of you, like the audience. Mm-hmm. And so instead of kind of introducing other characters, Matt and I play all of the characters.
Yeah. And they were generic, kind of in a way generic characters we play.
Like everyman.
We play everyman. You could be doing it too. It's just like Tony said, especially the
because
beginning.
Because we weren't there, you did it for us.
We're doing, yeah, moment. We decide, well, again, the easiest person to get a hold of is your roommate or yourself or like your best friend. Like
We have a photograph of the Last Supper, Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper.
And who do you all play?
I always play Jesus, actually.
He always plays Jesus and he always plays women.
And Matt always plays Judas. And
oh, wait, no, you were Judas too.
Was I?
Oh, yeah, you were.
I was Judas.
Yeah, he was Judas too. We
as I recall, there were more than just a couple people at the Last Supper.
Yeah.
Yes, he has played Judas.
Yeah. And then we've beheaded each other a number of times.
Okay.
And we've done a Caravaggio series. We do a lot of biblical and epic themed works.
Judith and Holofernes. Do you play Judith, maybe?
No.
Oh, it's just when you said beheaded people.
Oh, yeah. What was that? I was head of St. John the Baptist.
Yeah. Right, so you're really interested in past art, the history of... how far do you go back? I mean, what's the earliest artwork you've...
I suppose just Renaissance.
Yeah.
I think kind of basically we had an exhibition called Deja Vu All Over Again at New Orleans Museum of Art. And basically that title is the premise of most of a work that mankind really hasn't changed emotionally for, 500 years, a 1,000 years or whatever. So people are still doing and making the same mistakes and having the same actions. So when we look at art history, we reinterpret them with recent events, and kind of those tragedies are still happening today. Mm-hmm. So, they are... horrifically, there are beheadings still happening today. So it's kind of, it's interesting that when you look at those paintings from, the Renaissance, that they have all of those passions in there. And they were obviously making interpretations with modern clothing of their day scenes.
Yeah.
So they brought their own kind of world, their time into the pieces as well. We look at them as antiquated now, but that was actually contemporary clothing.
Yeah.
So they would feel quite comfortable, some of the Renaissance artists, with what you're doing with those subjects.
Well, Caravaggio in particular, we thought, we see him as a very modernist type of painter, using... but of course, inserting himself, that's kind of a classic as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And but using women of the night and midgets and Germans, like there was a very strange art criticism of Caravaggio, and one of them said that he used unsightly characters such as Germans, as if that was...
Could that be a mistranslation?
I don't know. perhaps.
If you have just tuned in, my guests are Tony Campbell and Matt Viss. They are the duo that comprises Generic Art Solutions, GAS. They have an exhibit that will open at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Saturday for Second Saturday Art Walk. The exhibit that you have opening at the ACA is called Bulletproof. Does that fit into your art history series, or what is this piece that you're opening?
Well, actually, it's the show is... there's a bunch of work what we've been doing over the last few years which have kind of gun or gun-related kind of imagery. And that's either from, like, a Hollywood background or from kind of, like a art history background also. Mm-hmm. So we kind of... They have different reasons, but we brought them all in together under this one umbrella.
So when you say Hollywood, you mean sort of film noir, that kind of feeling, or what? Just the use of guns in general in film.
Yeah, we have. I mean, we have some large silkscreen paintings which are after Andy Warhol, but they've got James Bond type characters, mm-hmm. and we're wearing tuxedos, mm-hmm. And kind of handguns, you know. So,
how did you get interested in the subject of guns and bullets and
kind of surrounded by it in
New Orleans?
You hear it every night.
Yeah.
So it's there's a kind of, I think there's a desensitization what happens with Hollywood and video games and stuff like that. Mm. And living where we do in New Orleans, there's a real side of that. You know, they're not hunting. No. You know, when you hear the gunfire, it's not any hunters going and getting deer or anything, you know.
Pheasants.
And it's not for some grand, fantastical kind of plot. They just go out, and if they see someone they need to take advantage of or they don't like, they just start shooting at each other. So it's really kind of more brutal and raw in that fashion. We kind of pick apart those sorts of things, the difference between Hollywood reality and real reality.
Well, now, you, Matt, have made your home in New Orleans for about 20 years, mm-hmm. and Tony, you've been there 10. So you seem committed to New Orleans at this point. Yeah. You're not running away from the guns. You're creating something out of it. In this particular exhibit, what have you... Is there a storyline? Is there a narrative that runs through it, or are they all individual pieces?
We... probably the most narrative-like piece in the show is called Motel Suite, and it's a set of maybe
18
photographs, mm-hmm. and it's kind of made like you would a movie, where you do cutaway shots and you do different shots make up the film, mm-hmm. But we've done this in stills, and they depict two men who are held up in a motel, and there's and they're heavily armed. There's like lots and lots of weapons, and it's kind of ambiguous whether they're good guys or bad guys. You know, in movies, often in movies you have that killing time where they're waiting in a motel getting ready before they do their sting or whatever they're doing. So this is very much that kind of moment. Not kill time, which is the what happens after killing time, mm-hmm. you know, like the
it's the psychology. It's kind of like the psychology of during that time, you kind of have to be prepared, but you're waiting and waiting. So you might maybe reevaluating your commitment to the mission. It's certainly, you know, there's some vagaries in there that it's like if you're at the top of a ski hill and you look down and it's really steep, you wait too long, you might not do it. So we kind of wanted some psychological kind of tension there.
When you say it's ambiguous, what could possibly be going? I mean, not to put images into people's heads, but...
I mean, these guys could be FBI agents, mm-hmm. or they could be bank robbers. Yeah. You know, they could be either. And kind of Hollywood betrays
on either
those,
side of the law.
Yeah, Hollywood betrays those people in exactly the same often as well. You know, it's like... they wear the same clothes.
Yeah, it's like you can actually be rooting for the assassin in some films. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute, isn't he murdering someone? But it's for the right reasons. And again, that's another classic twist is the morality of the persons involved. It's like, what do you do? Who are you loyal to? And there's the double agent kind of things. One of our pieces is called Double Agents, And it has to do with, they both look the same. The good guy and the bad guy are essentially, they're equipped, you know, similarly, and they look the same, and you can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. So.
And actually, we did go to a motel with a bunch of guns.
Oh, yeah, it was scary.
So it was kind of like, actually, really, that was really happening,
yeah.
Right?
In yeah, New Orleans, you did this.
New Orleans, yeah. East, which is even a little sketchier, on a basketball night of some basketball thing.
Do you find putting yourselves in those situations informs your pieces,
yeah,
even more?
Oh, boy. Yeah, we were peeking out the window and, you know, like, we wanted the room itself to be kind of a character. We needed to shoot every area and what you would naturally be doing there. So on the desk, it's kind of a businessman's suite. So on the desk where you'd be doing Wi-Fi, we'd be cleaning guns, and then in the little couch area next to the window, I'd be peeking out the window and Tony's playing solitaire and... Mm-hmm.
Well, so are these pieces photographs or paintings?
They're photographs.
They're photographs. So yeah. You are actually playing those characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. That's the thing is we like to say that basically we don't act. Mm-hmm. We do or perform the duties, mm-hmm, that we need to do for.
And there's a mundaneness about it, which is kind of, I think, the tension, mm-hmm, that there's there's this glamour about kind of, you know, mm, weapons and stuff like that. Well, we kind of intentionally shot them like this. We're brushing our teeth, mm, and kind of
eating a bag of potato chips.
Some, yeah, of the grand with tradition holster, of Pulp, yeah, Fiction.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this, yeah.
So you mentioned a double agent. What are some of the other pieces in this exhibit called Bulletproof?
Mm. We have a piece which is after Goya's The Execution of Maximilian. Which is, and basically that piece is got a number of, it's an execution, so there's like maybe 10 people doing a firing squad, and we play all of those characters, and that was an interesting shoot because we had to find somewhere relatively desolate, and somewhere would look like the border,
yeah,
like the Mexican border. That's what we wanted. And there was a militia thing going on. It was in the news, mm-hmm, about Arizona at the time when we made that piece. And it was kind of interesting kind of having to find somewhere because you can't kind of get out a rifle just anywhere, really, you know, to do the shoot. Even though we have...
Just in the daytime, that would,
yeah,
be...
Yeah, we've
even though we have lights and cameras and stuff to make it people aware that we're actually making... photographs, not dangerous stuff, mm-hmm, you know.
Yeah, we had to get kind of a little bit of a period look to it. One of the things was, which is actually very strange, is we were looking at the Hollywood guns that are just prop guns, and those are really expensive. And a part of a friend of mine who's kind of been mentoring me through like learning about this sort of thing, he said, oh, well, they have these moistened Nagants that were used in the Russian Revolution. Those are only $100. So to get the real thing...
Was cheaper.
And, again, they're more authentic, but it kind of ups the level.
The strangeness.
Yeah, it makes it pretty sketchy for us, yeah. So...
Well, again, I want to tell people who are becoming fascinated by what you're saying that you can see the opening of this exhibit, mm-hmm, they're describing. It's called Bulletproof. The artists are my guest in the studio, Tony Campbell and Matt Viss. They're based in New Orleans right now. The exhibit will open at the ACA this Saturday. Also with us is Mary Bate, who is one of the curators at the ACA. And Mary, I think you're pretty excited about this exhibit.
Yeah, I was curious if they were going to do a performance during the opening. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes, we are.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So just for the opening, they're not going to stay for the whole month or so. So you really, if you want to see their performance work, people should go this Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. What time is that going to be done?
I think we were talking about doing it 7. Does that sound right, Mary?
That sounds right.
Okay. We need to run it by Mary.
All right. So approximately around 7. Of course, you could go and stay the whole time.
Sure.
And that's from 6 until
9.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we don't want to scare people what the... We're not shooting anybody.
Yeah. Right, I'm sure that was a question in some people's minds. So in addition to Bulletproof, Mary, what else is going on at the ACA?
Well, we have the closing of the Southern Open, which will be the final night that you will be able to see that. And that is 31 artists that are, it was a competitive juried exhibition from the 5 Gulf Coast states. It was curated by Renee Barrio, who's the chief curator at the McNay. There's over 70 pieces of art, and there were 3 winners, and Lee Dygard was the grand winner, and she will have a solo show next May in the side gallery. And then upstairs in the Maya Galleria, we have Inhabiting Horizons, Capturing Fleeting Spaces, and this is a 3-person show. It's John Oliver, Emmy Morgan, and David Weber, and it's an installation of glass artifacts that they've collected from surrounding cane fields, and it's capturing a sense of place and time. It's actually a very beautiful show. There's a lot of color in it, which would be surprising. In the Coca-Cola studio, we have 2 young painters that graduated from UL in the last 5 years, Carolyn Scalfano Falk and Eric Todd. Their show's called Another Time. And their work is, they take very mundane scenes and they paint them. A lot of the subject matter to me is very similar to what we would see in Impressionism, like a Vuillard or a Matisse. But they paint our contemporary scenes. They will paint like the inside of a shower, or, you know, the side of a building with, like, modern architecture, or a street lamp, a current-day street lamp. And they're just painted in a really kind of straightforward way, but they capture a sense of place and time also. And in the vault, there is Gary Rock, who is a woodworker. So that covers, and then, of course, we have our guest here in the side gallery.
That's right, and I think there's also a jam going on upstairs, and I think that's Jam des Amis, and one of our young workers, Megan Brown, is going to be the host, so I needed to add that. So lots to do at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Saturday, 4-Second Saturday Art Walk, and again, in the side gallery, my guests, Matt Viss and Tony Campbell, who are Generic Art Solutions. You can see their exhibit called Bulletproof, and the performance piece will be around 7 o'clock. But sounds like you could stay for a while, see everything, and just be there for when the performance piece actually starts. If people would like to see more of your work, do you have a website?
Yes, genericartsolutions.com.
Okay, just type that in there.
All right.
And you have kind of a gallery so people can see kind of the different styles and different themes that you all work with. Well, thank you both for coming by, and we all look forward to Second Saturday Art Walk this Saturday. Thank you. And now a look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Opening this evening at Lafayette at the South Regional Library is the exhibit Becoming Louisiana, The Path to Statehood. That reception is at 6:30. Opening in New Iberia at the S&E Theater, IPAL's Summer Youth Musical, Disney's Mulan Jr. It will run through July 22nd. Opening in Lafayette tonight at Theater 810, the Tea Sippers present Samuel Beckett's Endgame. It will run through the weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7:30, and Sunday the 15th at 2 o'clock. Tickets are available by calling Theater 810. In Eunice, Storytime at the Eunice Public Library tomorrow at 10:30. For more information, please call the library. And on Saturday, Insect Day at the State Arboretum will take place 11 until 10 p.m. If you'd like to know more about it, go to insectday.com. And this Saturday is Second Saturday Art Walk in downtown Lafayette, all along Jefferson Street to galleries with new and some returning exhibits. That's from 6 until 9 in some cases. Stay tuned. Tune to KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6 o'clock. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. And at 7 o'clock, we join Ira Glass's This American Life. At 8, it's Thistle and Shamrock. At 9, Franco Mix. At 10, Earthbeat. At 11,